Welcome to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. I am Doc Mike, host of the podcast. A series of Forrest Gump-like events have brought me to where I am, a small-town country dentist. My experiences in country living, country freedom, country dentistry, and my reaction to pertinent current events may help you live a life of more freedom and less worry. Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Now let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode. Hey, this is Doc Mike, the Redneck Dentist. Thanks for joining me here live on Real Liberty Media or downloading the podcast. I have a funny story to tell you about that today, too. This is the fastest hour on Real Liberty Media, and I don't turn left. I'm just a guy having fun making light of the darkness, for crying out loud. You know, I'm going to try something a little new. This is going to be kind of weird for me. I'm going to take my headphones off because I really don't need them, I don't think. But it's kind of one of those things, like, I don't know, I think I'll feel kind of naked, but oh well. Let's see. Okay, here it goes. All right, there they go. They're gone. Oh, and Google wants to know what I'm looking for. Isn't that cool? I hate that. All right, anyway, you guys can always catch this show live every Wednesday and Saturday, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And Hal Anthony on Sunday does a two-hour show at 3 p.m. Eastern. And holy cow, I'm telling you, I have to praise the guy because he's so dang good. 2 hours of complete, solid information, no breaks, no commercials. That guy just feeds us a ton of great information. So check him out tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern. It'll be awesome. I can guarantee it. I had a little trouble with my webcam today, too, right before I went on the air. That's always irritating. So it might work. It might not. I don't know, and I don't care. People don't need to see me. Let's do a little quick rundown of what's going on the homestead. We're finishing harvesting the tomatoes. We pulled the last plants. They're hanging in the greenhouse. We're going to let the tomatoes ripen on the vine in there, the few that are left, but we have a ton. We have a freezer full of tomatoes that we're going to process here in the next, I don't know, week or two. It's a busy time of year, man. But that's the way harvest goes. You never know when everything's going to be ready. And this year was one of those strange years. Everything got kind of started late because of a cold and freeze and snow in the spring. But then we got this fortunate kind of extension of sun and, you know, blue sky and sunshine up until yesterday, which is really unusual for Oregon. I've said it a million times. But, yeah, so the tomatoes are just finishing up, and that means we're going to have to process them between now and Thanksgiving sometime. We're going to have to find some time. But anyway, we started the sauerkraut a couple days ago, I think on Tuesday, because I think I mentioned it on Wednesday's show also. So it's going. I can't wait to try that. And, you know, since this is our first time, of course, making sauerkraut, it would be kind of fun to see how that goes. I happen to love sauerkraut and kimchi and a lot of stinky stuff that people don't like. I'll tell you guys something funny. You know, since I had this heart attack, I've been eating more fish. I mentioned it before. I eat canned salmon, canned tuna, and canned sardines on a salad. Pretty much it's always on a salad. But, my staff hates it because, you know, I'm not a real big dinner guy. So I, you know, lunch is my main meal. And, so I'm always doing that at work, and they just think it's so obnoxious that I'm eating fish at work, which is really kind of funny. And I guess it kind of goes to show you, you know, when these nutritionists tell you, you know, you should eat so many fish meals a week, and you can, unless, of course, you live on a coast where you get fresh fish, Or, you know, you kind of are one of those people, very rare people, I think, that eat fish regularly. People just aren't going to go out of their way to do it, which is kind of unfortunate. Probably explains why we have, you know, kind of a problem with cholesterol in our society. But just taken from the reaction I get from my own staff, I can tell it's not really a popular thing, that's for sure. Let's see. Yo, we've had a number of meals here where we've eaten a lot of stuff out of the garden, and it comprised most of the meal. You know, it doesn't include the meat. Like I said, we buy our beef from a local guy that raises grass-fed beef, and I buy pork from the same guy, and chickens, you know, that we raised ourselves. But the pork and the beef are actually not raised on site here. But we are kind of going after some elk and deer this time of year, so we'll see how that turns out. I'm not, you know, because of stuff this year. The egg production is going awesome. A lot of, you know, eggs being produced. I bought six different hens this year that are egg layers and make a decent meat bird, so we're going to hatch some of those and see how that goes and see if we can get some meat production coming out of the chicken coop and, you know, just see how it goes. It is cold and rainy and more on the way finally here in Oregon. I'm really excited about that, even though I got to tell you, since a heart attack and being on blood thinners, it's strange. I have never in my life been cold, which, you know, I mean, this just kind of goes to figure that, you know, my entire life I would have been toasty warm no matter what the environment was doing. And then later in life you have a heart attack and, you know, for whatever reason, blood thinners or whatever, I was cold when it was 90 degrees outside. And now, I mean, I'm kind of acclimated, but I still feel it, you know, like, oh yeah, it's cold now, and I feel the cold, but it's okay. I'm still living and loving life and doing what I really enjoy doing. Which kind of brings me to this point. Oh, I was going to talk about those blood thinners a little bit. Pebbles, my beautiful Bengal cat. I almost called her a kitten, but she's like 2.5 years old. I guess that's still kitten-ish. I still consider her a kitten, my little baby girl. But anyway, hey, hold on one sec. I just noticed something. I got to fix this a little bit. Just hang with me here one second. Let's move this guy. Yeah, that's the problem. Okay. All right. I'm messing with my camera. Live on the air. That's never a good idea. Oh, that's probably not what I want. And I really shouldn't do this here. So let's get back to business. Anyway, Pebbles got me a couple times today. And it's really weird being on blood thinners because, because you bleed. You know, it could be the littlest, tiniest little poke, man. And you don't notice that you're bleeding because you don't think anything about it. I mean, how many times have you been, you know, pricked by a kitten in the past? And, you know, for me, I don't ever think about it. But Jesus, it's like a, you know, stuck pig here. Not like I'm saying I'm going to bleed to death or anything, but you would think for as tiny as the little pokes are that, you know, I wouldn't bleed that much for crying out loud. So that's a little bit aggravating, you know, just things, man. I shouldn't complain. I really have such a blessed life. I really have no reason to complain whatsoever, but I'm going to. All right. So politically, here we go. 2 weeks or so to go. Is that right? What happens? Whatever happens, the Dems. The current admin is already blaming the conservatives or Republicans for not being able to get things done, even though they've had the House and the Senate since Biden has been elected. You know, so they've had this power for at least, well, coming up on 2 years. But yet they're going to start blaming the Republicans for, I heard him say that if Republicans are elected, the economy is going to crash. And I was like, wow, that was just genius planning, that you actually crash the economy and then knowing that you're going to get your ass handed to you in the midterms. I mean, that's kind of what it's showing in the polls. I'm no expert, trust me. But it's like, yeah, if the Republicans get elected, you know, the economy is going to crash. And the little in parentheses in there should be, because we crashed it, but we're going to blame it on the conservatives for sure. Anyway, it's going to be interesting no matter what happens. You know, I know a lot of people in the United States are just, you know, dying for this election to come, that they think that a lot of things are going to get stopped. And maybe, you know, maybe start turning this country around. But I was thinking, like, one of these nightmare scenarios happened in the past, and that's this. So the current administration, the Democrats who are running the country right now, have completely mishandled it. And they've caused, you know, inflation and recession. I mean, I've heard financial analysts say now, it's a 100% we're going to have a recession, which I thought was funny because we're already in a recession. But, and they even said, you know, in the next 10 months, we're going to have a recession. Well, it's already here. So come on, let's get on board with it a little bit. But here's the scenario I've seen play out one other time in my life that I know of. And that would be times when I actually paid attention to politics, which I didn't always do. Because, you know, I always just wanted to live a life, you know, and I think a lot of people, that's what people want to do. They want to live a life and do whatever they want to do as long as it doesn't harm other people, although there's people out there who want to harm others. But most of us just want to live our life, pay our bills, you know, enjoy our family and our homes and our vacations and our work and just go about life. And, you know, so a lot of people don't pay attention to politics. And I'm actually going to tell you a story of, you know, this little event I attended yesterday. It was 2 hours away, and it was the doctors and office managers of this group I work for. Maybe I shouldn't mention it, but I mean, it's the group I work for. It's a group. It's a really nice dental service organization. You know, they employ me, have taken really good care of me, and I think I provide really good service for them and their patients, my patients. So once a year, they would have this thing they call the summit, where they get everybody together, they close down all the offices, and we go just talk about stuff and mingle, and there's some continuing dental education available, a guest speaker who was pretty good. This summit was all about treating mentally disabled people, people who require extra care, because so many of us just immediately refer them to somebody who's experienced in handling those people. But I'm going to tell you, I want to pass on knowledge that comes to me that could be helpful for you in making some decisions going forward. So this is really interesting, and I don't think it is unique to Oregon, but I'm going to lay out this scenario a little bit. So there's a group of anesthesiologists in the state of Oregon, or there was, and it was called M2. I don't know why they call it M2, but it's called M2. That group of anesthesiologists would provide anesthesiology services to different clinics and hospitals and emergency rooms and whatever. I mean, they just were a group of anesthesiologists. So wherever they were needed, whoever wanted to pay them, they would show up, provide these services, and then go away, which was kind of nice. So if you remember me talking way back when I was going to start doing the root canals on children, one of the not requirements, but one of the things we were going to do, because some of these children were also in that group that was hard to handle, let's just say, or required to be sedated in some way to be able to get their services done. Well, that group of anesthesiologists, M2, would come in and put the kids to sleep, and we would do our work, and the anesthesiologists would wake them up and make sure they were good to go and send them home. So that was cool because they were in charge of all of that, and they took responsibility for that, and it worked out really well. Well, here's the deal. So I really don't know where all these healthcare workers went, but a ton of anesthesiologists left, a ton of dental hygienists left, a ton of dental assistants left, a ton of dentists have left. And I mean left as in they're no longer in the field. They're gone, as in they quit, they disappeared, they did something else, whatever. Well, so the anesthesiologist, the group, M2, all these big hospitals or conglomerates, whatever you want to call them, but the ones that have more money, they actually started hiring these anesthesiologists outright. And they were giving them, you know, better pay and better benefits. And I mean, why wouldn't you go that way? I mean, I get requests every week to go somewhere else, to do something other than what I'm doing now. I mean, it's all dentistry related, but I mean, the headhunters on LinkedIn, or I don't know, sometimes I think they just find you through other searches. They just send you emails. And I mean, you can at this point, you can kind of name your price and benefits and go. So I can't blame anybody for just doing that, you know, taking the better deal. I tell my assistants all the time, man, if you get a better offer, you better take it. Because, you know, if you sit around waiting for this corporation, and I'm not saying anything bad about this corporation. All corporations are kind of the same. And I'm not bad-mouthing them. I'm glad there's corporations out there. It's good for business. I mean, it's good and bad for business. But it provides a lot of employment for a lot of people. But here's what I've noticed about corporations. So if you want to raise and you're working for the corporation, they're really stingy about giving raises, which never has made sense to me. It's like, if you want to keep good people, you would think you would give them regular increases in pay or benefits or something to keep them around, especially in times like this when, you know, you have people leaving left and right and a shortage, you know, we put in an ad for a hygienist over a year ago, and we have one hygienist on the hook who supposedly we have hired, but she hasn't shown up, and I guess she hasn't really kind of solidified what day she wants to start, and she's not real good at using a computer, so everybody thinks maybe she hasn't checked her email, or doesn't know how to respond to it, or doesn't know how to fill out the paperwork, or who knows what. But I mean, one hygienist in a year. You used to be able to grab hygienists from here or there. You know, there was always plenty of them, but there's not. And anyway, so such is the case with these anesthesiologists, and why we had this summit meeting to give us additional kind of education and training on providing care for mentally disabled patients, mostly mentally. Some of them have physical disabilities too. But the reason is because those anesthesiologists are now kind of working for specific institutions. They're no longer available in the pool of people that we used to draw from to come in and provide anesthesiology services. Not only that, but because they've taken these jobs in these different hospitals and institutions, the few doctors we have who have hospital privileges, their time is extremely limited in those hospitals because bottom line is dentistry is kind of low on the totem pole for, you know, critical need as far as having to get stuff done. So we're going to have to provide more care in the office. And that means we're going to have to learn how to deal with mentally and physically handicapped people in a way that we, both us, the providers, and the patients are comfortable with. So it was a pretty good meeting, really. It was a very eye-opening kind of like, okay, you know, yeah, it's not in my comfort zone, but, you know, those people need care. And I mean, right now, there's just, there's very limited capacity for, you know, to provide care. So anyway, so I was at this meeting. I'm going to kind of getting on to this thing I want to tell you. I was at this meeting and I was already kind of, I'm not really a social person. I know that sounds weird because I deal with people face to face every day, 8 hours a day. You know, somebody's 17 inches away from my face while I'm working on them and talking to them or doing an exam or whatever. But I really prefer not to be in, you know, large gatherings. But, you know, I know a lot of these people and it's kind of fun to get together once a year and kind of share stories or experiences or just say hello, you know. And one of the guys who is there, I won't really mention his name, but he and I have a pretty good, you know, I would consider him a friend, remotely a friend, a peer, associate. But we have some things in common that we enjoy talking about. And he showed me this picture. He goes, look what I have coming next week. And it was with that Ford electric truck. And the sad thing is that my visceral reaction to an electric vehicle, knowing what I know now that I didn't know 2 years ago, that I've kind of gained a lot more knowledge of in the past, year and some months, as I really looked into, you know, the damage that's done to the environment, the damage that's done to the kids who have to go mine these rare earth metals, the limited number of rare earth metals we have to make these batteries, that's going to completely, you know, put a shutdown to this whole electric vehicle idea. And yeah, I know people are always saying that, you know, technology is going to change, it's going to get better. Yeah, whatever. I mean, whatever. It isn't. Right now it isn't. So we have limited amount of these materials that are going to limit the number of electric cars that are going to be made. So anyway, my reaction was not probably what my friend was thinking it was going to be. And we were on break, so it was, you know, time to kind of share stories and, you know, rub elbows and say hi to people. But man, I just started kind of going off on how, you know, yeah, I don't, you know, I actually said, yeah, I don't care if we use third world country kids, you know, as slave labor to haul this stuff out of mines either. And he just kind of looked at me like, oh, crap. But the thing is, this guy knows all that stuff. And the funny part of this whole story is he actually got on the list when they sent out, you know, a promotion saying, hey, would you like one of our electric trucks? He reserved one for $100. And it came in, so he's purchased it. He already has a buyer to buy it for $13,000 more than he bought it for. So he just wanted to be on the list and get it and drive it, but he already did all the research himself, and he knows all that stuff about, you know, kids being used as slave labor and the limited amount of, you know, rare earth metals and how dangerous those batteries are and how expensive they are to replace, et cetera, et cetera. Not only that, he kind of looked at the towing capacity, the hauling capacity, the range. And yeah, the only thing he really had good to say about it is, you know, they're really quick. He said, will blow the doors off the Raptor. I used to have a Ford Raptor that was just a beautiful, very high performance truck with some aftermarket add-ons that made it even faster and more powerful. It was awesome. And he said, yeah, this thing will blow that thing's doors off, which, you know, I mean, that's where we share the, that's the thing we share is how much power you have in your vehicle, you know, and how fast it'll go, how quick it is. And anyway, it was kind of funny. My reaction was just so, oh, I don't want to say inappropriate. I don't really think it was inappropriate, but my gosh, it was so, I mean, literally visceral, like just came from deep within me to start going off on the whole idea of electric vehicles. And then, you know, my office manager was there too, and she was sitting only a chair away from me. This friend of ours was kind of to the left of us, just like half one chair apart. So we were all kind of sitting together and talking. And she said, yeah, if you want to know Doc's views about, you know, green energy, just go ahead and listen to his podcast. And my friend says, he has a podcast? And she goes, yeah, it's a Redneck Dennis podcast. So he looks it up. He just Googles it. And he sees all these titles come up. And of course, I can't remember exactly what the title to the last podcast was, but I think it was something like, haircut bad, cutting off penis okay. And he said, oh, is that you? And I go, yeah. I go, yeah, that's me. And so he said, well, I'm going to listen to this on the way home tonight, because we all had a little bit of a drive home. Of course, I had like 2 hours. He had probably 45 minutes or an hour. So that was kind of funny. And then I was thinking, wouldn't it be funny if somebody, like if Rochelle just had, let's say if she just had my outro on record on her phone, and whenever I started going off, if she just started playing the outro, I would probably say something like, and that's all the time we have for today, and I would shut up. Anyway, I thought that was awesome. And then, of course, the coffee place I go to today, she told me she was on the treadmill listening to one of my the most popular podcast on BitChute, the Anthony Fauci mass murderer, you know, mass killings, mass murders, serial killers and mass murders. I don't know what it's called, but it's a good one. I think that's a pretty good show. So anyway, here we are. Here we are doing the thing. I got to get a drink. Oh, I'm taking my, hang on. So good. I got a bear literally right above my head. You guys will know what that means in the video. I'm drinking my supplement tonight because I've noticed if I don't do it before the show, by the time the show's over with, I kind of forget about it, which is horrible because I really believe that this freaking... Okay, there's colostrum in here, bovine colostrum. Colostrum, that means comes from a cow. I only said that because, you know, I'm the redneck dentist, just in case, like a lot of my people I hang out with would be confused by bovine and colostrum, both of those things. So yeah, I'm drinking that tonight along with, I already had my Mullen tea with the medicine ball mix, and you know, I have something nice and cold here, water, ice cold water. Fantastic. I was reading the chat. That's good. I love having the chat open and having people in the chat too. I didn't mention that earlier. So if you're on a social media, you know, platform, would you just send out a little something saying that we're live or tell people to go and listen to the podcast? It really helps us out. Keeps us going, and maybe we can bring some more people into the chat room. That'd be cool. Love having conversations there. All right, let's get to the rest of the stuff. I said, I guess I'm tired of being quiet and why I should stay away from large gatherings. Man, that's no kidding. Because later on, I was thinking about my reaction. And I was like, yeah, that could have been offensive. That could have been offensive for sure. Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to finish up a little bit from the last show because I got caught kind of short, which is okay. I mean, it's okay. It's nothing, you know, although this could be life altering, I guess. But last week I was talking about these couple of things, post-COVID-19 vaccine syndrome, where I was kind of talking about how all of these injuries and effects that have come after this vaccine. And I got to tell you guys, I'm not kidding. I was late preparing notes this week for whatever reason, I guess because Friday I was gone and who knows, whatever things, in, you know. So from Wednesday, I did Wednesday night show, had some notes left over, and then Thursday, I had, you know, watch Thursday night football and do some notes, and then Friday, no, because I was traveling. And then today, oh my gosh, today I started hauling manure to the north pasture from the neighbor's property. And I thought it was going to be about 2 hours, and I think I was out there for like 5 hours or something. It was ridiculous, maybe even six. I mean, I took a couple breaks, and I was using the tractor. It's not like I was doing it by hand. But anyway, so at the last minute, I'm trying to put my notes together and get everything organized, and I think I did. But anyway, so last week I was talking about the, you know, this COVID vaccine syndrome. Oh yeah, and that's what I was getting to. Is this week I'm thinking, okay, maybe we'll be lighter on COVID this week, right? On the back. But I'm not kidding. I've said since they started pushing this vaccine on everybody, the jab, that we would know more when people started studying and gathering data on what the hell was going on after so many people had been shot. I think that's a good description. After the federal governments of the world shot everybody, then they could start gathering data on how many injuries occurred. So actually they have something now called a syndrome, a vaccine, post-vaccine syndrome, because there's so many injuries that go along with it. And I talked a little bit about how the spike protein is the only thing that's been identified with a lot of these injuries. So in other words, if you had COVID and had all of the proteins that are associated with a COVID virus, if there is such a thing, you would have a lot of damage showing up. The cells would show that there were all these different proteins in the cells. But what they're finding is they're only finding spike proteins associated with a lot of these injuries. Well, the jab only uses the spike protein to stimulate the autoimmune response. So if you only have spike protein tidbits causing cellular damage or causing platelets in your blood to accumulate and then block your arteries or block, yeah, your arteries or your veins or whatever. Well, you can pretty much say that the only thing that could reasonably have caused that is a vaccine that only had spike proteins in it. So the rest of the virus particles are not present because it wasn't COVID, the virus, that caused the damage. It was only the spike proteins. And the only thing that delivers spike proteins is the vax, okay? So anyway, I was talking about that. I didn't get to the treatment options, which I've kind of covered this before. Maybe I should actually just straight up do, oh God, that's the, yeah, I should. I'll do a show just on how to detox from the spike protein or the jab juice, okay? But basically, it's ivermectin. There's another one called spermidine. Merrick recommended low dose naltrexone, a common drug for overdose and narcotic users. So anyway, all of this stuff you should be able to discuss with your primary care, you know. And maybe there's going to be something like, you know, some clinics that actually are, you know, are set up specifically to detox from the jab for those of us so unfortunate as to have gotten the jab. I did a lot of this stuff on my own. pretty much from day one of, you know, getting the jab. I think even before I got the jab, I was doing a lot of this stuff. And I added some things afterward. I actually got some ivermectin. It didn't help. I still had a heart attack. But I survived it, which I think everything probably helped a little bit. I think everything I did helped a little bit. So anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit. What the next thing on the list in all of the COVID thing, actually, I want to go back to my notes for today, and I'll tell you why. I'll tell you why in just a sec. You'll know why. Because I had a number of people. Yeah, okay, so I'm going to bring up this story here. So people dying in their sleep linked to vaccines, explains Dr. Peter McCullough, cardiologist. Now, if you remember, Peter McCullough was one of the first guys who was fired, who had his license taken away, his ability to practice restricted, he was canceled, you know, all of those things. But, you know, apparently he's still gathering data and speaking at conferences. Anyway, but let's look at some of these, some examples. For example, South African actress Francie Swaynepoel was found dead in her bed on Sunday morning, October 16th. She was in the middle of filming a new project. Swaynepoel was 50. Her cause of death is still yet known, according to news reports. Earlier this month, a young dad, Jack Grosier, was found dead at his home in New Cumnock, Scotland. Just hours before, he had texted his girlfriend to say that he'd talk to her the next morning. He was 23 years old. He leaves behind a one-year-old son, according to the Irish Monitor. 17-year-old Gwen Gaston, whose father is a lawmaker in the state of Illinois, you remember this, also died in her sleep on October 7, 2022. Gaston's family issued a statement on Instagram explaining that their daughter, who had no known health or behavioral problems, died of a heart arrhythmia of an unknown cause. She had just come home from an evening with friends, went to bed, and didn't wake up, the statement read. Now, this is interesting. McCullough says he's a board-certified in internal med and cardiovascular disease who presented at this conference in Florida, I think it was, said that when people, especially young people, die in their sleep, the underlying cause is often myocarditis. Now, we know because of the manufacturers themselves put out, you know, their post-marketing experience study that showed that myocarditis and encephalitis, inflammation of the brain, are actually both, you know, possible complications of getting this jab. Myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart, can lead to irregular heart rhythms that can be lethal without immediate treatment. Something else. Oh, so this is kind of interesting. So see this, a surge of catecholamines. So it may seem counterintuitive. Dr. McCullough said that sudden death that happens during sleep are biochemically similar to the sudden deaths during or just after vigorous exercise. How many young athletes have we seen die? We still have no idea what causes cardiac arrest. Really? Seemingly healthy 18-year-old suddenly loses consciousness during tennis practice, but ultimately survives after a friend takes action. So there's one. I mean, I have some others, I think, in my email. 95% of corpses had received a COVID vaccine within 2 weeks of death. We'll get to more examples here, but I wanted to get back to what he was saying. This catecholamine thing. So this is what's really interesting. So basically, like, you release these catecholamines at certain times. I guess apparently, here you go. Catecholamines are hormones that are made by the adrenal glands. They are released into the body in response to physical exertion or emotional stress. But they are also released during sleep, just before waking, as a signal to the body and the brain that it's time to get up. These catecholamines can increase our heart rate, blood pressure, and breathing rate, among other things. In the body, there are three catecholamines, dopamine, epinephrine, and norepinephrine. A surge in catecholamines, whether it happens during sleep or during exercise, can stress the heart and cause it to beat arrhythmically. And he says probably these young people who are dying in their sleep are actually dying when they get the signal to wake up. If a young person's heart has been damaged by an infection, vaccination, or any other reason, the surge of catecholamines can be lethal. This is the reason, McCullough said, that people seem to die in their sleep. They're really dying just before they wake up or just before dawn. Anyway, this is a pretty interesting article. It's beginning to explain why so many young people are dying. I just want to go over and look at my email because I could have sworn I had another story. Let me look over here. Yeah, I probably got rid of it. Let's look in our notes here. Don't go away. I'm right here. Let's see. Oh no, I apparently didn't get it. Anyway, it's really interesting to me that these kind of things are starting to come out. And look at it. What's really fantastic is these same people who were calling this out from the beginning are still around. Thank God, are still around collecting data, doing science, and actually showing how horrible this vaccine is. I don't understand how the CDC actually came out with their recommendation that children get this stupid vaccine after all of the news that's out there about how bad this vaccine is. But I'm telling you, it's actually kind of scary. So in this group of people, this event I went to yesterday, how many of them don't actually know any of this stuff? Like, they're not against people getting the vaccine. And I was actually just waiting for somebody publicly to talk about getting your COVID vaccine. I was really going to go off then. So maybe that's why I was kind of a little bit wired up already. When my buddy showed me this electric truck he was buying, is because I was just dying for the opportunity to oppose and actually vehemently oppose anybody who suggested that anybody needs a COVID vaccine. I, honest to God, can't think of one person who should get one of these vaccines. Not one. Not one. I don't care how old you are. I mean, the risk of getting COVID, versus the risk of getting COVID after one of these jabs and then having all of the side effects to deal with. I have a huge list that I'm keeping. The Pfizer guide I'm keeping. We have damage to semen. They actually show where semen's destroyed, interfered with by this vaccine. Blood clotting death, reactivates chicken pox. Increases COVID infection, abnormal menstrual cycles, effectiveness wanes quickly, jab interferes with protection due to spike protein changes. It actually interferes with protection to other things like the flu. The list of adverse jab reactions in women, let me see this, Pfizer dangers, the list of adverse jab reactions just keeps growing. That's a whole paper. COVID jab accelerates Omicron spread. Moderna's own research showed rib abnormalities in rat offspring, and Pfizer for kids wanes quickly. And plus all of these people, young people that are dying, and unexplained deaths. They say these unexplained deaths, these are deaths above and beyond what would normally occur in our population. So it's 25% higher number of unexplained deaths, people dying in their sleep. And they're without pre-existing conditions. Something else that came out of this study, this gathering, was that they were finding that young people can have these, the scarring. Myocarditis causes the scarring in the heart, and then actually leads to a fatality somewhere down the line, because the myocarditis may be mild. It may be asymptomatic. You may not even know that you're having an inflamed heart muscle, but it does leave scarring. And then later on, you're in some vigorous activity, or you're sleeping peacefully in your bed, and you go to wake up, and you know, the epinephrine and the dopamine and the norepi kicks in, and it causes your heart to beat, you know, arrhythmically, and you just die. Or during, you know, a soccer game, how many people did you see in the last year drop on the soccer field? And many of them died. Anyway, what they were saying is these myocarditis can cause the scarring in the heart, and it can be present for up to 12 months undetected. And then, you know, during some vigorous activity or whatever event, sleeping, you know, these people are dying. So one of, let's see, who was it? One of the people attending this, oh, there it is, vaccine-induced myocarditis may take months to appear. So there's a woman here who does physicals on young people before they can play sports, and she won't sign off on it anymore unless she does blood work, because there is a tropamine there's a chemical that can be found in your blood if you have myocarditis, and it's at troponin, T-R-O-P-O-N-I-N. These patients were found to have higher than normal levels of troponin in their blood. Troponin is a type of protein found in heart muscle. When it is present in the bloodstream, it can be a marker of heart failure. So, of course, if your heart muscle tissue is dying, then some of this chemical is going to show up in your blood because your body's trying to clean it up and get rid of all the dead stuff so that it can deal with any healthy tissue that's left and try and make it, you know, good. It says, these findings, the scientists wrote in their discussion, is an indicator of cardiac injury and fibrosis, scarring, and has been strongly associated with worse prognosis in patients with classical acute myocarditis. This is one of the docs that, so she won't sign off on an exam unless she does blood work on these young athletes to make sure that they haven't suffered, you know, some myocarditis and some have any scar tissue in their heart before she'll sign off on them, let them go to carry on with their physical activities, which is awesome. I mean, she's going to be saving lives just by adding a little blood screening to the physical and finding out if there's any troponin in their blood, and then they can do a cardiac scan and see if there's scarring, or, you know, there's some ways I'm sure that they go beyond saying, hey, you better take it easy for a while. You know, God, that would be terrifying. It would just be terrifying. You know, because what, I mean, how would you keep from dying in your sleep? I mean, you can keep from doing vigorous activity, right? If somebody says, oh, hey, you've had myocarditis, you have this scarring in your heart, we want you to take it easy. Okay, well, you could do that. But you can't not go to sleep. Anyway, that's pretty horrible. Oh, yeah, here she is. These days, however, heart issues among children and young adults who have taken COVID-19 vaccines are common enough that Dr. Ferrella said she will no longer sign routine sport physical forms without doing a full blood workup on her patients to check for signs of cardiac decline. This includes testing for troponin in the blood as well as the D-dimer levels, a simple blood test used to rule out the presence of blood clots. So that would have been nice. And, yeah, some parents think it's going a little too far, but Jesus, if she saves her child, you know, it could be, that would be handy. Let me get another drink. Holy cow. The fastest hour on Real Liberty Media. We are cruising. Oh, my goodness. Well, let's talk about, I think the next funnest thing to talk about. I want to talk about Elon Musk a little bit, and I'm going to tell you why. Because, like, when I first heard of Elon Musk launching all these satellites, I go, why, how, like, how could he, wait, do I have a link to this? I bet I don't. Well, maybe somewhere. Let's see. Is there a wiki page? Oh, there is. Let's see here. Oh, my goodness. That's long. Let's just go. Starlink. Here we are, Starlink. Okay, when I first started hearing about some guy was going to be launching satellites, I was like, how in the hell does a guy get to launch satellites? Like how... Like, where do you sign up to launch satellites into space? I mean, I admire Elon Musk and, I don't know, Jeff Bezos, I guess. There's a couple others. Who's the guy from Virgin Galactic or something? Didn't they launch a rocket, too? I mean, I think they all kind of have the aspiration to launch rockets and get humans into space or maybe get them to Mars or something like that. But I was just wondering, well, how in the heck do you do that? Like, how do you, where do you sign up to launch a satellite? You know, I mean, building a rocket can't be that hard. NASA can't do it. But, you know, that was a joke. I'm sure building a rocket is hard, you know, rocket science. But how do you get, who do you go to permission for, you know, to be able to launch a satellite, for crying out loud? But anyway, Elon Musk has done that, and he's figured out a way, you know, to get rockets to go into space and come back and land and reuse the rocket. I mean, the guy is obviously extremely smart. I'm sure he's a genius, for crying out loud. And he's hired some really, obviously, a whole crew, a whole team of fantastic people that are putting these things together. I mean, hell, you know, I think this week they launched another 40 or 50 satellites. And I like to look for them in the night sky because when they first launch, the first couple of days, they're so close together, it looks like a train going through the sky. And it's really cool to see. And there is some page you can go track Starlink. But here's what I was really getting to. So pretty, I had a couple concerns when I heard this in the beginning. It was like, okay, you're going to put all these satellites up there. And, you know, Joe Schmo, the redneck dentist in Sheridan, Oregon, is going to set up his telescope and go to look at Saturn and show the grandkids what Saturn looks like. And I'm going to point my telescope towards Saturn, and there's going to be a damn satellite in the way, you know, blocking my view. Now, I don't know if that's really true or not. I really don't. But it seems to me that people who are earthbound and like to, you know, look at the stars and planets and look at the night sky and look at it with, you know, binoculars or spotting scopes or telescopes, it seems like those satellites would kind of get in the way. You know, I know they're tiny. They're like the size of a basketball. And they relay information. They're an internet satellite. So they, you know, they upload and download information, right? That's what they do. So I was going to say they're not dangerous, but kind of one of my points about this whole conversation is, you know, so Elon Musk has done a lot of good things with his satellites. Like he did, you know, provide some coverage to the people of Hurricane Ian. like, hey, you know, everything's down there. Let's turn on the satellites and get them some internet. So they got some internet going there. He actually provided some internet coverage for Ukraine for a while because, you know, the Ukrainians didn't have any internet. But here's what happened. So I don't know if you heard about this. So I got to put my headphones on because, you know, the outro is going to come on and I'm not going to hear it. Okay, so he provided internet for the Ukrainians because they didn't, you know, they were being attacked, blown up to pieces, and their services were down. And then I guess, you know, there was some like disagreement or something, and I don't know, maybe Putin and Musk had some conversation, and I heard that the president of Ukraine didn't want to pay Musk for any internet when, you know, he was getting billions of dollars from the United States. I think he could pay for $150 satellite internet. I don't know how much it is. That was a joke. I was being sarcastic, sorry. But apparently, you know, Ukraine told him, you know, that they weren't going to pay for internet. So Musk just shut it off. It was like, okay, well, screw you guys then. And I mean, you kind of can't blame him, but it kind of made me start thinking, you know, as a private guy, he's not a world leader. I mean, not an elected world leader. As a private guy, he actually has some influence in a war. That's kind of scary, in my opinion. Got a cough. Hang on. Anyway, kind of scary, in my opinion, that a guy could have, you know, some, like, that's not just the kind of power where you say, I think you all should turn out your lights tonight, you know. No, that's the kind of power where you're actually allowing communication to either take place or not take place, which could really affect a war, right? Anyway, let's see, what else did he do? But I mean, the guy is really actually pretty nice to make sure that people have internet coverage. And it's kind of funny to think how important that is these days. But you can kind of see how few people would survive an actual kind of end of the world catastrophe if, you know, that they pretty much depended on having internet or not having internet. But I really was surprised that this guy had so much power, actually, to affect an actual war with what he has done. I mean, he's got probably hundreds or thousands of satellites up at this point. I think I saw somewhere he had 1,200 up, but he's actually aiming for thousands, like tens of thousands of satellites to cover the entire world. But how weird is that then that, you know, this guy could be sitting, it's like the wizard, you know, behind the curtain in Wizard of Oz. He's just sitting there and he'll just pull the plug on whichever way he may influence a war or a debate or, I don't know, freedom or, that was the other thing. Didn't he provide Skylink internet services to people in Iran because of the protests that were going on there? And he wanted to make sure that, you know, the world knew what was going on. And, I mean, it really seems like he has some good intentions. But, you know, I'm always worried about a wolf in sheep's clothing, for sure. And this could be one of those scenarios, in my opinion. You know, he seems like he's a really good guy. He seems like he has good intentions. But holy crap, you could actually affect the outcome of a war, and maybe in this case potentially world war, we don't know, by either allowing or not allowing information to travel, you know, letting freedom of speech reign. And I don't blame him for wanting to get paid for what he's doing. I mean, he's obviously spent bajillions of dollars, and I mean, he's got to be thinking that he's a smart guy. I know that he knows that there's not much time left for Tesla, the electric vehicle. Anyway, I'm going to sign off because guess what? Our music is going to start playing in about 3 seconds. Thanks, you guys, for listening. I'll catch you on Wednesday. Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.